Welcome to WISO Weekend, WISO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Today on the program, we take a look at the latest production from the Yellow Springs Kids Playhouse. The Cotton Club features music from some great jazz legends. We'll hear some of that music and meet some of the kids performing it. Later in the program, Emily McCord brings you Politics Ohio, and we've got a preview of tonight's documentary. Up first, Why Are the Walls Screaming? Is the title of an art show up now in the Yellow Springs Arts Council Gallery. The artist, Tony Powers, is a synesthete. That means when Powers hears a sound, he also sees an image, superimposed over the visual reality most people perceive. Powers' artwork is an attempt to show the world what he sees when he hears. WISO's Sarah Buckingham talked with Tony Powers. She started out by asking him to define synesthesia.
Synesthesia is a fusion of the senses, that a single stimulus creates multiple perceptions. In my case, when I hear sounds, they make images for me. So every sound that I hear creates a visual image. And there's a lot of varying degrees of synesthesia, and there's lots of different types. And even within particular types, say, for example, I have sound-to-vision synesthesia. Another person who has sound-to-vision synesthesia will not experience the same sound in the same way that I do. I can say all day long that the sound of somebody's name is bright red, and another person will just claim all day long that it's cobalt blue. The simple fact is that for each person who has synesthesia, it is specifically different. It's very subjective from person to person.
So it varies person to person, but for you, is it consistent?
It is always consistent. The same sound will always make the same image.
Okay. I actually have a few sound effects on a CD here, and I'm wondering if it's okay with you if I could play a couple of sounds and have you describe what they look like for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay? First one is going to be the sound of a blackbird chirping.
All right. Now, when I listen to that, and you have to remember that there's also a spatial context. It's not just purely a color. It is a shape and it is a location. So that's it's a really, really bright blue color, but it's tiny little pips. Almost jelly bean shaped, and they're really little, and they're way up into the right of space as far as I'm oriented, and they sort of stretch out. All the little chirps kind of sort of make a little, almost like little Christmas lights, a little string of Christmas lights.
And you perceive those images, tell me how accurate this is, in sort of the way that I might recall a memory and I sort of see it in my mind's eye, or is it something that's more external?
The way I like to describe it is if your visual world were a photograph, and the synesthetic world is a transparency of shapes and colors, and you lay it on top of the photograph, you can discern both of them at the same time. Even more accurate than that would be if you took a set of goggles, right? And in one eye, you saw a picture of the visual world, and in the other eye, you saw a picture of the synesthetic world, and your brain divides the two images, and it says, there's no common ground between these two things, so I know that they're two totally separate images, despite the fact that I'm seeing them both at the same time with the same faculties.
That's fascinating. Let's try another sound. What do those church bells look like to you?
The church bells, they're all kind of a brassy, reddish orange. Although where they get a little bit quieter, there's some brown around the edges as the orange gets a little less saturated. And the very first initial attack of the chime is a little bit brighter. It's a little bit more yellow. And it sits right around the middle range of my visual spectrum, almost at head height. And it's a lot bigger than the blackbird sound is. It's shaped kind of like kind of a horizontal tube of these colors.
And is there any sound that you associate with a specific object, like a basketball or a car?
Piano, a very nicely tuned piano, single notes on it sound like fingerfuls of ice cream. And the higher end of the piano, it looks like vanilla ice cream. And the lower end of the piano, it looks like chocolate ice cream. And right in the middle, it looks like strawberry. So a really nicely tuned grand piano is a Neapolitan sandwich, as far as I'm concerned. And a particular one that my parents always remember and they like bringing up is my middle school. The school bell used to be kind of this klaxony buzz, and then one year they got a new bell, and it looked just like a strawberry milkshake.
Did it make you hungry hearing the bells ring, thinking about milkshakes?
I did tend to kind of want one after that, which is strawberry isn't my favorite flavor of milkshake, but it was kind of like remembering having a strawberry milkshake and then realizing that you don't have one right now, and it would always be nice to instead of being in math class.
And how rare is this? Like one in how many people?
I cannot remember the exact statistic, although I do know that out of all synesthetes, sound to vision accounts for about 40% of synesthetes. So as far as synesthesia goes, mine is a common one. But synesthesia is uncommon, and a lot of people don't know anything about it, which makes it obviously difficult for people that do have it to know what it is because there's not a large discussion base on it. There's a lot more going around about synesthesia now than there was 10 years ago or 20 years ago, but it's still not a very widely circulated topic, maybe partly because it is so rare and also partly because it's not an experience that very many people share. Even among synesthetes, as I said, it's a distinct experience for every individual person. So finding the common ground is really difficult, which is a big thing that I'm trying to do with the show, is I'm trying to make what it is that I experience accessible to people. I'm trying to help them understand that even though what I see is something that absolutely nobody else sees in exactly the same way that I do, it doesn't mean that it's not genuine or that it's not real, and that somebody else who sees things that not everybody else sees, it can be just as real for them.
How do you feel about it being classified as a disorder?
I don't like it because I don't think that synesthesia itself is inherently a disorder. It's just a difference.
And do you think there's any special connection between synesthesia and creativity or artistic ability?
One of the questions that I most commonly get is, do I think that synesthesia has made me a better artist? My response to that is that it's rather the inverse. Being a synesthete doesn't make me inherently better or worse at anything than anybody. But being an artist and learning how to create art and to visually represent things has made me a better synesthete, because it gives me the ability to express it, which is the big thing that the show was about. And the thing that I was really working with was coming up with a way to make images that people could actually see of these things that they actually could not.
Okay, let's talk about the show. How did this get started for you?
What I really wanted to do early on was make images of things that people could recognize. And then only maybe 2.5 years ago, while in one of my classes at Wright State, we were outside and we were drawing. I didn't know what it was I wanted to draw. I would start a drawing and I would just throw it out, and I would start it and I would throw it out. And I finally got so fed up that I just thought I would sit down and I would do this exercise that I did sometimes where I would just draw what the sounds looked like. And so I sat down in the entire class. I just sort of relaxed, and I drew a collective picture of what the sound of the woods was over the course of the class, thinking that at the end of it, it would just sort of have relaxed me, and that then I could do, you know, a real drawing that somebody would think was a real drawing. But then I started getting lots of feedback about people, or from people, about the image that I had drawn that they were really interested in. And this was the first time that I had done a synesthetic drawing that other people had looked at. It was really interesting to me that people were interested in the idea of it, because I've always thought that synesthesia was interesting, but I also kind of thought that maybe that was just because I had it. And it's also a difficult thing to bring up in conversation, for two reasons. One, if you just suddenly say, hey, you know what? I see big red puffs of cotton candy clouds right now, then people look at you very strangely. And the other thing is, even if you know how to articulate the experience and you're listening to a piece of music with somebody else and you say, oh, this looks like, you know, there's all the string instruments, they're making this river right here, and all this is going on. And they can't share the experience with you. And so it feels exclusive.
Do you get sick of explaining it to people all the time?
I love explaining it. I like the dialogue about it. And that was another reason that I loved putting together the art show, because it was an opportunity to create that dialogue. Instead of, you know, standing on the street and saying, hey, guess what I see right now? It was building a situation where that was okay for me to say, hey, guess what I see right now? And it's a lot like being in the art show for me is a lot like seeing my brain on the walls, bigger than my head, and other people climbing around inside of it, looking at the things that I see.
Thank you so much, Tony.
Thank you.
You can see what Tony Powers sees when he hears at the Yellow Springs Art Council Gallery next Saturday, July 9th from 10 until 2 p.m. or by appointment. This is WISO Weekend. The musical The Cotton Club revisits the famous nightclub in New York City during the time of Prohibition. It's got a colorful cast of characters and features the music of some of the great jazz legends. And it's the latest production for the Yellow Springs Kids Playhouse. This past week, I dropped in on a YSKP rehearsal to learn more about their latest effort. As soon as I arrive, 13-year-old Larisha and 11-year-old Reese are practicing one of those great jazz tunes.
That song was called I Got a Right to Sing the Blues by Harold Arlen, who was an in-house composer at the Cotton Club.
Music director for YSKP, Neil Kirkwood.
The Cotton Club, they did reviews at least every year they would come up with a new review, maybe more often than that. So they have songwriters to write new songs every time. So Harold Arlen wrote lots of great songs. And then Duke Ellington wrote some songs and arranged and did a lot of dance numbers. And Cap Calloway came in with Winnie the Moocher. That was done there. So, yeah, a lot of great stuff.
How are the kids reacting to the music?
They love it. They love the music. It's really heartening because I love this jazz standards and that with the world of music, and the kids don't hear it that much, you know. So whenever I work with kids, I always make sure they know who Duke Ellington is. But this year they're coming in and say, oh, every time I call a song, they say, yeah, I love that song. So it's really, really nice feeling.
The musical takes place in the legendary Cotton Club in Harlem in the 1920s and 30s, and Kirkwood says that time is memorable for the music that was taking place.
The reason we remember it, I think mostly, is because of the great music. Duke Ellington started there in 1927, which was a big break for his band, and he was there for several years. Cab Calloway played there, Louis Armstrong, Billie Holiday, some great people were featured there. So we remember it for the music, but it was also a wild scene with... It was run by gangsters, and, you know, a lot of celebrities would come uptown to hang out and be seen.
It sounds like could be some adult subjects involved with the Cotton Club, but that's never been anything that YSKP has shied away from.
That's true.
From Dick Tracy to James Bond, from Sense and Sensibility to The Arabian Nights, the YSKP has covered a lot of theatrical ground over the years. Director John Fleming talks more about this year's production.
Well, the production tries to capture the milieu of the Cotton Club, including people who were in attendance that were the famous and the infamous of that day, sports figures and politicians and what we would call celebrities now, and, of course, gangsters. And there are 13 songs altogether and a couple of original tunes, too. It's actually a very light show, light and entertaining, and, you know, it's kind of goofy at times, and we wanted to keep it that way this year. Have fun.
One of those kids having fun is a girl named Alex. She's here for the summer and has been involved in YSKP productions for about 4 years. She plays two roles this time around.
J. Edgar Hoover is more challenging than the head waiter, I suppose. And they're more fun to do than I thought they were going to be. And I knew they were going to be fun when I got them, but I really enjoy playing both of them.
Did you know who J. Edgar Hoover was?
Nope.
And how are you approaching that character?
I'm trying to do what John tells me to do.
Linnea of Yellow Springs is also returning to the YSKP stage. She's 17.
This year is really fun. You know, I get to kind of be this laid-back, very cool kind of mob boss character almost. You know, like a nice Don almost. It's kind of hard to describe.
How is it working with this group?
They're doing really well this year. I've actually been really impressed with how they adapt to their characters and bring them to life on stage.
Yeah, we've had a few like frustrations and whatnot, but we've mostly gotten over that stuff.
You can see everyone progressing each day. They get better.
Since you've both been involved with YSKP for a couple of years, how has the experience with these productions changed you?
Wow. Well, I was really shy about doing theater, but last year just completely broke me out of my stage fright. You know, like having to go on with a giant bird puppet definitely gets you into the groove of things. So, yeah, it's been really great, and it's helped me to kind of come out of my shell.
Same thing a little bit for me. I started doing YSKP because I wanted to hang out with my friends all day, and I also had really bad stage fright, and each year it gets better. And it's enabled me to do more things on stage more comfortably. Like, and not even on stage, you have presentations in class, perform in school band concerts. It makes it all so much easier, and it helps you become more responsible, too, in a way.
Next, I spoke with a couple of boys in the production, 14-year-old Jalen and 13-year-old Gabe. Jalen plays a character called Snake Hips.
He's smooth. He's like, from John's perspective, he's not what you would see in a normal, in a regular man back then. He was smooth, and he moved his hips a lot, so, and which you didn't see in the guy so much. So he kind of reminds me of me a little bit, but in a way, he's more movie.
As in moving around?
Oh, yes, moving around like a snake. I guess that's why they call him Snake Hips.
And so you're having fun with this character, I'll bet.
This is very fun for me. I mean, so fun, I love dancing and singing, and he loved dancing and singing, so there.
Young Gabe plays an older Jack Dempsey, the famous boxer.
You can kind of tell that he wants to be in his glory days still, like when he was still really famous. And so I really enjoy acting this character. He's not really myself, which is kind of fun. I really enjoy that.
How is it working with the other kids this year?
Well, I met some new people and made some new friends. In this play, I don't think there's exactly one main character. I think we're all kind of just spread out.
That's nice. So you're all working together.
Yeah, it's a team effort.
Jalen, Gabe, and the other kids are a bit nervous about the show, but they're excited as well. That excitement comes through as about 13 of the performers run through one of the show's big numbers.
Jumping, come and cast your check, your eyes on me, 'cause
find out more about YSKP's production of The Cotton Club at yskp.org. They've got some special events taking place during the show's run. It opens July 7th at the Antioch Amphitheater in Yellow Springs. Also on their website, you can see a video of YSKP alum Michael Malarkey. He's playing Elvis on stage in London, and he talks about his time with the arts organization and how it's affected his life. This is YSO Weekend.
Welcome to Politics Ohio. I'm Emily McCord, and today I'm joined by Joe Ingles from the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
So the governor signed a lot of bills this week, and I want to start with the state budget. Both the Ohio House and Senate reconciled the differences, and were there any major changes?
Well, there were a few major changes. When you looked at the House version of charter schools, they really didn't want a lot of limitations on charter schools. The Senate version did want more limitations on charter schools. And in the end, the Senate won out. The House didn't get charter schools free and clear of guidelines like they had wanted in the beginning. We saw some changes. The Senate kind of moderated some of the things that were more strict in the House version. They kind of went down the center more with some of the things, but there were still some things that a lot of people are upset about. They say, you know, a lot of the Democrats are saying that this budget was hijacked by a bunch of conservatives who drove very conservative values into the budget. So there are a lot of things that are contentious.
Another controversial thing that the governor signed this week was a law legalizing concealed weapons in bars and restaurants that serve alcohol.
Exactly. If you're allowed to carry a concealed weapon currently, then you'll be allowed to carry that into a bar or restaurant with no repercussions, unless, of course, that bar or restaurant owner has decided to post a sign on the door saying you can't carry a concealed weapon in here. But even in that situation, it could be hard to enforce it. And that's one of the claims that the Bar and Restaurant Association made when this was going through the process.
Now, are pro-gun advocates happy with this legislation, or do they want to see more of this?
Well, they're happy with it, and they want to see more of it. We've heard from some of the pro-gun people who were supporting this legislation, and the next thing they want to do is they want to make it so that you can carry guns in churches and hospitals and universities and those sorts of places. So that'll be the next thing that comes out of the legislature.
And Governor Kasich also signed a plan to allow oil and gas drilling in state parks. How will that change things?
Well, that means that they can drill in the state parks. In the past, there's been a ban on that. You haven't been able to do that. But some state parks, they say that there's no reason they shouldn't be drilling for oil and gas in those parks, and that this will help with the situation with energy. It would help with the state's bottom line, and that it won't harm the environment. Of course, environmentalists have a little different take on that. They think it will harm the environment.
And other big news this week was that the House passed a controversial bill surrounding abortion. Can you tell me about the heartbeat bill and what's likely to happen with that?
Well, the House passed this bill that says that basically if you can hear the heartbeat of the fetus, then it is protected. You can't have an abortion. Heartbeats typically can be heard sometime between 5 to 7 weeks, so it would affect those first trimester abortions that are about a month into a pregnancy.
And this is some pretty drastic legislation compared to other laws in the books in other states.
Well, Ohio Right to Life had such a big problem with it, Emily, that they said they wouldn't back it. They said that it is unconstitutional. A lot of people who've taken a look at it say it's unconstitutional, particularly when there are no exceptions in that bill. There's no exception whatsoever for rape, incest, the life or health of the mother.
So if we have a major pro-life organization saying they don't want to touch this bill, what do you think the future is going to be for it?
Well, it'll go to the Senate, and we'll see what the Senate wants to do with it. Now, it's notable to think about this, though. The Senate passed its own bill, which is a viability bill. And it says at 20 weeks into a pregnancy, a doctor runs a test, and if that fetus is viable, then therefore it's protected. You cannot have an abortion unless the life of the mother is on the line. It's not as steep as a heartbeat bill is, but both bills are further in Ohio law from where we've been.
And it seems that there's a lot of bills this week that are moving through either the governor signing it or it's moving through the legislature that are very much championing far-right policies. What has the reaction been from Democrats in all this?
And that's exactly it. The Democrats are really upset. They're saying that their voices weren't heard at all in this process. They're saying that there's no bipartisanship. They think that the far-right causes, the people, the legislators who represent those causes, have taken over the legislature. You know, the Democrats are very upset. And the one thing that we're going to see, Emily, is a lot of these things that have been passed, people on the other side of the issue have already been promising lawsuits on these things. The people on the other side of the abortion issues are promising lawsuits. The environmentalists, they're saying they're going to try to prevent this with a lawsuit. The drilling in state parks, I mean, they're going to try to prevent that with a lawsuit. So we're going to see a lot of contentious debate still. It's just not going to be in the legislature. It's probably going to be more in the courts.
I've been speaking with Joe Ingles from the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, Emily.
That's it for this week's edition of WISO Weekend. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks so much for joining us this Sunday morning. Before we leave you, here's Sarah Buckingham with a preview of tonight's Moth Radio Hour.
Tune in for part 3 of Backstory's Civil War special tonight at 6 p.m.
From weapons of mass destruction to the USS Maine, each of America's wars has been accompanied by its own debate at home. But no war has produced as much debate about its root causes as the American Civil War. Was it slavery or states' rights? Might it have been avoided, or was it baked into our history from the outset? 150 years after the shooting began, the national conversation about what the Civil War really meant is still going strong.
We're the American History Guys, and today on our show, we're diving headfirst into that conversation with an hour devoted to your questions about the Civil War.
And at 11 o'clock, WTF continues. This week, Mark Maron has an intimate conversation with his old friend, comedian Louis C.K., They recall the days when they were both struggling young comics in Boston, when Louis was getting rejected by SNL, and the birth of his first child.
When I had my daughter, her mother had her in front of me, everything changed. I just fell in love with this kid. I just felt, I remember she was screaming in the delivery room, really upset. She seemed particularly upset. I mean, kids are supposed to cry when they're born, but she seemed angry to me and upset. Like, I expected just, oh, you know, when a kid's crying in the delivery room, everybody's smiling.
Yeah.
Oh, look at her cry. You know. But I was really upset for her.
Yeah.
And they put her on this little table, and they're putting stuff around her. Sorry.
It's all right.
Unexpectedly emotional. It's not a story that I tell a lot, so.
It's all right, man.
Water is good. It washes away your love for your children. So you can talk without a shaking voice.
Hear the rest of the story on WTF tonight at 11 p.m. on WYSO.
Coming up next, The Book Nook. You're listening to member-supported 91.3 WYSO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield, and online at WYSO.org.
This week, American Roots celebrates 50 years of down-home music from our Hooli Records.
Live from Berkeley, California, it's a special concert at the Freight and Salvage Coffee House. On stage, Rai Cooter, Taj Mahal, the Treme Brass Band, Maria Muldaur, Michael Ducé, and many other friends. I'm Nick Spitzer. Join me for American Roots from American Public Media.
This afternoon at 2 on 91.3 WYSO.